And in my own marriage, the only narrative I had at a time when Seth and I were having a really, really hard time was the Eat, Pray, Love narrative, right? That you could leave your marriage and go find love in Indonesia. But what was happening in our own marriage at the time where that was really the predominant narrative was that I wanted to be in my marriage, but as you just said, I thought I was going to be divorcing Seth over the sponge in the sink. And my proverbial sponge in the sink was a text my husband sent me that said, "I'm surprised you didn't get blueberries." Hey.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
Friends, and welcome to the Paula Ferris Show. I'm your host, Paula Ferris, and do we have a doozy of a topic today? We are diving into the number one strain on most relationships. But before we jump in, a big congrats to Carol and Cheryl, who won the 5 Love Languages bundle that I gave away in my personal newsletter. If you are not signed up for my personal newsletter, it goes out every 2 weeks. You can sign up at paulaferrisofficial.com. It's just a time to connect. I can share my favorites, what's going on in my life, a little encouragement, and every now and then some really fun giveaways. Okay, back to today's conversation. I have continued to hear from so many of you, a lot of women who don't even want to be identified with your name and your question. But the topic is this: how do you share the household load without it feeling like one is nagging the other? How do you manage your home while managing your career? We're talking about the division of labor, the household labor. It is the number one stressor and strain in most relationships. Just even how to have those conversations. Where do you begin? How do you have it without nagging? And I do not want you to invalidate this conversation. I don't want you to brush it to the side, because it is so important to have these conversations in order for so many of us to save our relationships. 25% of couples end up divorcing because someone left a sponge in the sink or didn't take out the garbage, because what it does is it invalidates the other person. And the majority of mothers also say that their husbands stress them out more than their children. So this is a very hot topic that's happening in our homes. We don't know how to navigate it. We don't know how to have it. So I wanted to invite my friend Eve Rodsky to the show. Eve, you've probably heard of her. She's the founder of Fair Play. It's actually a New York Times bestselling book. It's a documentary, which is, I think, necessary viewing for all couples, anyone that's in a relationship, because the division of labor, who's doing what around the house, puts so much stress and strain on relationships. Again, it causes us to separate and divorce over the stupidest reasons. Fair Play has become a movement. She's a lawyer, yes, but she has become this expert on the gender division of labor. And she's going to give us some hope. She's going to give us the 3 steps on how we can effectively have these conversations in our house. And her method is saving relationships. By the way, John is going to weigh in next week. I do think it's really important to have a male's perspective on all of this. He'll weigh in on this conversation next week as we continue our series on relationships. But without further ado, here is Eve Rodsky, founder of Fair Play, talking about the number one stress on relationships and how we can save our relationship and have these conversations. Oh, Eve Rodsky, I'm so glad that you are joining me on the show to talk about it. We are going to talk about relationships and how big of a strain the domestic labor, who's doing what around the home, the household labor, it puts a huge strain on just about every relationship. So I want to untangle that and figure out how we can better partner and give some people out there hope that there might feel hope. Like they're at their wits' end. So you had this wonderful documentary come out called Fair Play, which came out of the book, a New York Times bestseller, Fair Play. Loved both. I'm obsessed with the documentary. For anyone that hasn't watched the documentary called Fair Play, it's fantastic. I think every couple, it should be required viewing for every single couple out there, because it's true. The way that we can invalidate one another, you say in the documentary, 25% of people divorce over those little things, the garbage, the sponge in the sink, because it's the constant invalidation. And for you, Fair Play came out of a breaking point for you. How did this all come to be, this whole movement, the book, the documentary? Tell us about that breaking point that led to where you are today.
Thanks, Paula. And I love what you're building. I think it's so important. And I don't think anybody comes out of the gate thinking that they want to be an expert on the gender division of labor, Paula. And it's definitely not something I thought I'd be an expert at. I'm a lawyer. I work for families that look like the HBO show Succession. You should feel bad for me. But what I do for those families is I design systems for them for really difficult organizations, for when those organizations are having problems. I started this as a lawyer who was at my wit's end with my partner. Mm-hmm. And in my own marriage, the only narrative I had at a time when Seth and I were having a really, really hard time was the Eat, Pray, Love narrative, right? That you could leave your marriage and go find love in Indonesia. But what was happening in our own marriage at the time where that was really the predominant narrative was that I wanted to be in my marriage. But as you just said, I thought I was going to be divorcing Seth over the sponge in the sink. And my proverbial sponge in the sink was a text my husband sent me that said, "I'm surprised you didn't get blueberries." We've talked about that before. But I think it's important to contextualize why blueberries, dishes, garbage, right? They can be, as you said, invalidated as, what are you so worked up about? What's the big deal? So what, I didn't put a garbage liner back in the garbage.
Yeah,
so what, I don't know the shoe size of our kids. It gets invalidated to be so small that people could say, how could blueberries lead to an entire movement? How could blueberries lead to you wanting to divorce your partner? But I'm surprised you didn't get blueberries text came to me when I just had my second son, Ben. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I was being physically abandoned by my workplace that was telling me I couldn't come back because I wanted one day to work from home. And they didn't have a place for me to pump. I was going to have to pump in a stairwell or a broom closet. And I had to bring a battery pack because there was no outlet in that broom closet. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking about quitting, opting out, which I now call being forced out. So my workplace was abandoning me. And then my partner abandons me by thinking I'm the fulfiller of his smoothie needs in a day when I'm racing to get my other son from a toddler transition program that lasts about 1 minute. All of a sudden I get, I'm surprised you didn't get blueberries. So now I'm the fulfiller of Seth's smoothie needs when I have a breast pump and a diaper bag on the passenger seat of my car and gifts for a newborn baby to return in the back seat of my car. And I'm trying to navigate how to go back into the workplace where I'm feeling completely invalidated. And then my partner invalidates me, my workplace, my community who only knew me as an identity, and my partner at the same time. And when I did a word cloud for thousands of women who are like me, especially after motherhood, the two biggest words that popped out in their word cloud were overwhelm and boredom.
Mm.
So what a terrible combination to be overwhelmed and yet bored. So that is ultimately where we end up. And I think that that context is why the straw that breaks the camel's back are these small things that are actually signifiers of much bigger things.
Right. It's the, like you said, it's the constant invalidation. And look, I don't want to make gross generalizations. There are some like superhero guys out there that are probably pulling the majority of the weight at home, but I would say that's an anomaly because
and
I both know
it
is. You and I both know as working mothers, look, all moms work. Okay, let's not get into that debate. We can have that debate down the road.
No.
All moms work.
Working for pay. Yep.
Yes. Working mothers in the workforce are then coming home and picking up the majority of the hours at home. I think there was a statistic not too long ago. I actually included it in my book, You Don't Have to Carry It All, that working moms are working 98 hours a week. Okay. When you add in the responsibilities at home and the responsibilities at work, and we've kind of reached this tipping point. We don't even know, we're, like you said, overwhelmed, completely overwhelmed, yet we're bored. Like, where do we even begin? How do we have those conversations? Because I know I can make gross assumptions like, well, my husband should just know how to do this. But you know what? He just doesn't know what he doesn't know. So how do you even engage in these conversations and start to have a conversation without your partner feeling defensive? I had a question from a woman and she's like, I have a question that I want you to ask, but I don't want you to give my name. I want it to be anonymous because we're so scared of how our partner's going to respond. And often, you know, we come at them in a moment of rage or heat, and that's obviously not the time to do it. But the question was, how do you share the household load without it feeling like one is nagging the other? How do
you do it? That's a great question. I think the most important thing to tell everybody out there is that you're not alone. And yes, if you happen to have a unicorn partner that helps you with the full ownership of a task, which is what Fair Play is about, and we'll get into that, then you need to become a cultural warrior with us. Parent out loud, talk about that relationship dynamic, because what we know is that 2/3 or more of what it takes to run a home and family are shouldered by women. Yes, we're talking women married to men. In the Fair Play documentary, if you want to learn more about sort of the same-sex dynamic, we have a whole exploration of that. But we're really centering women married to men, because even if you're not married to a man, those implications of you being the domestic in a relationship affect your career. They will affect how much you get paid over your lifetime. So it's very, very important to sort of center this man-woman dynamic, because it's causing a lot of problems in society.
It's the motherhood penalty, which is...
It is a motherhood penalty, correct.
Paid less, valued less, scrutinized more once you become a mother.
Correct. And not even if you become a mother. If you are identified as people thinking you may become a mother, it starts to affect you. So really, it can affect all women, no matter what your choices are, if people are going to perceive that you are a caregiver in some way. And it's very, very, very alarming, just the amount of money that women lose over their lifetime based on these assumptions.
Yeah.
So the good news, Paula, the good news.
Yay, we have good news.
One, if you're hearing this for the first time, understand that this practice took me a decade, right? So if you're hearing this for the first time, I would suggest don't do anything with this. Just listen to this a couple of times and maybe just live with this new understanding. A successful organization has three things. It has boundaries, systems, and communication.
Okay. So, BSC, if you need an acronym.
Yes.
BSC. Okay. I'm taking notes, by the way. Yep.
When boundaries, systems, and communication show up as a practice, the organization is functioning. However, when you break down, as you said earlier, why this is so hard, I want to answer your listener's question first. So let's start with communication. I ended up starting with systems first, not just because I'm a lawyer and a behavior designer, but because of how hard communication was. I needed to give people a system so they knew what to ask for. What happens is we get into these patterns where we say we can't communicate about domestic life because it's too triggering. Now, Paul, I'll give you one example to illustrate that. During the pandemic, somebody sent me a Facebook group out of the UK that was called The Reasons I Hate My Partner and Kids During COVID. That was the name of this Facebook group. It has 27,000 members. A woman posts in this group, if my husband dies during COVID, it will be because of me, not the disease. Okay. So I reach out to her and say, hey, I would love to know how you communicate about domestic life. I'm a communications researcher and I do a lot on, you know, the gender division of labor. And she writes back to me, thank you so much for your question. I don't talk to my partner about domestic life. It's too triggering. So I just want us to just stew on that for a minute, that this woman felt that publicly threatening to murder her partner in front of 27,000 strangers felt safer to her than having a conversation with her partner. That's how hard communication around the mental load, invisible work is, Paula.
Yeah, it's really hard. And like you just illustrated, we usually have the conversation when we are at our wit's end. And then we use those triggering words. You never, you always, you shut up, you know, whatever. And it just turns into a huge fight.
Absolutely. And so I'll give you a quick story that I think illustrates what boundary systems and communication can look like within the Fair Play world. I'll tell you about Richard and Amy because it's a small story and I didn't put it in the book. It happened during COVID. It's not in the documentary. So it's a fun story I could tell you because it's
a
newer story. But there was this couple that was introduced to Fair Play before the pandemic. As we were interviewing couples for the documentary, We interviewed over 125 couples to decide who to feature. One of their stories was really interesting to me because we're talking about relationships today. And we're talking about the good news, that these are heavy, heavy, heavy issues, but that things mm-hmm. can change.
Yes,
so
they can.
Richard tells me that they introduced fair play into their lives. And so what that meant for them was that they were willing to sit down when emotion was low and cognition was high, not in the moment, as we just said, and to start mm-hmm. to think about what they wanted to allocate in terms of who was handling what domestic labor. Now, fair play is predicated on 100 cards, right? They're right here.
Yeah.
It's a metaphor. You don't actually need the cards, but you don't have to buy anything. They're on our website. The goal is a movement for all of us to value this labor. So there's 100 cards. And the premise is that when you hold a card, you hold it with full ownership. So mm-hmm. if you hold the extracurricular sports card, you don't just show up at the Little League field. You email everybody for what sports your kids want to play. You sign up for the AYSO portal from 1980. You get birth certificates. You hand the birth certificates to the coaches. You order equipment on Amazon or wherever you're going to do that, borrow equipment.
Yes.
You're on an 85-person text chain, all just to get your kids to the field.
Right? You're That's taking full ownership of it.
Exactly.
Like full ownership of
that
it.
That is the premise That's of amazing. Fair play. It is okay. what we do in the workplace. So when I designed the system, I thought, okay, we're going to do what we know for 50 years works, which is that I don't work for Paula if I walk into her office and say, hey, Paula, what should I be doing today? I'm just going to wait here every single day until you tell me what to do, right?
Mm.
Nobody's working for Carrie Media if that happens, right? So Amy and Richard get on board with this concept of ownership. And what they realize when they go through the fair play cards was that Richard actually was handling with ownership a couple of the cards that were really important, which we call the Daily Grinds card. So he was completely in charge of dishes, from unloading to loading to doing a perfect dishwashing. He was really, really great in terms of garbage. He got the garbage liner back in. He didn't have to be reminded to take the garbage out when it was spilling over. He knew when trash day was. He got the garbage out to the street. He brought the cans back in. These are all what we call the home suit of the cards. But then they looked at the caregiving suit, which are things like estate planning and life insurance and birth control and dental appointments for the kids and friendship and social media for your children and parents and in-laws and pets. Mm-hmm. And he realized that caregiving and magic, which are some of the suits, weren't really ones that he had been sort of tackling in the home.
Right.
And so he decides that he wants to be in charge of magical beings, which is one of the cards. So that
magical
beings.
Okay, beings.
So magical beings are things like Lucky Leprechaun, Santa, and our favorite, the Tooth Fairy. So as you can imagine, what they tell me is that the first time that he is Tooth Fairy, the Tooth Fairy doesn't come. Tooth Fairy doesn't come. She had already lost a tooth, so it wasn't the mm-hmm. first time. So she sort of knew the pattern of the Tooth Fairy. So what is so beautiful about relationships when you have boundaries, systems, and communication is what happened next. So typically what was happening is exactly what you said earlier, Paula, was that because this would be so triggering to Amy, she would have typically been a verbal assassin and said, I told you, I knew I couldn't trust you, because that's really what happens when the little things erode. You lose the two most important things that any relationship needs, which are accountability and trust.
Mm.
So that would have eroded and she would have said, I can never trust you. You're a terrible human being. She's telling me these are the things that she would have said, right?
Oh my gosh, you
ruined our child's dreams. They are never going to believe in anything fun or important anymore. So she didn't do that this time because her partner, Richard, had and took accountability first. Given that he had already agreed within the Fair Play system and cards that he was going to have ownership over the Tooth Fairy and magical beings, he said to her right when it happened, I messed up. I can't believe I did this. When she heard that he was taking accountability for his mistake, she was able to step back and say, we all make mistakes. I'm going to trust you to carry through your mistake, because that's what an ownership mindset is. She doesn't get involved in the Tooth Fairy situation. So what Richard does is with his daughter. He emails that morning toothfairy@gmail.com and says, "Hey, Tooth Fairy, what happened? You know, you forgot us last night."
This is so funny.
So during their day, which was either Zoom school or whatever, he gets a response from this email address, which I can actually not believe. He's like, "What is happening?" Yeah. It was more performative. He didn't think he'd actually get a response. The email responded something like, "Sorry, I'm having supply chain issues with getting teeth to everybody during COVID." He prints out this email for his daughter and shows it to her at the end of the day and says, "The Tooth Fairy responded. She's having problems with teeth. And it turns out when she's late, she brings double the money."
Yeah. Wow. Okay, there you go.
And that's it. He continued to be the Tooth Fairy. He continues to own it. They carried through their mistake. But that is how a boundary systems and communication cycle works. Mm-hmm. I respect you so that I know you shouldn't have to do all of the caregiving tasks in this family because they take a long, long time mm-hmm. and they require a lot of planning. Systems, I own it. And I understand that to own the Tooth Fairy means whatever we agree to it to mean, which is in our household, one of those dollar coins gets under the pillow before our child wakes up. And then the communication, which is if I make a mistake, I'm willing to own that mistake.
That's
that
really
cycle
good.
Is a very, very important cycle, Paula, because nobody ever gets everything right. We have to be in those practices. Otherwise, we will lose the erosion of those two most important things in a relationship, that accountability and that trust.
That's really good. So boundaries, systems, communication, and the most important things in a relationship, accountability and trust. So often I'll ask my husband to do something. And then when he doesn't do it how I wanted, he'll throw it back and say, "Well, if you wanted to do it a certain way, then you should have done it yourself." So what you're saying with this is, again, it's the boundaries. I've got to let him, if I want him to do it, I've got to just let him do it.
Right. But only if you've discussed it before, right?
Because you have to discuss it.
If you're saying, "Oh, just do school lunches," right? How does that person understand what your expectations are, right? I think before Fair Play, the thing that bothered me the most was every article that had a solution to the domestic labor had a lower your standards vibe to it. I'm not into lowering standards, but I am into discussing things in advance. At least the things where that someone else has maybe not taken ownership of before.
Sure.
And what that means is similar to that Tooth Fairy story. What is our standard, our minimum standard of care mean for ownership of this task? And that family, Richard and Amy, decided that it was just, it was no handwritten note. It was no sparkly glitter all over the room with little like footprints. It was just a dollar, one of those dollar coins being slipped under the pillow.
So good.
So I will say, similar to in your situation, anytime that your partner is redealing a card, that's how I like to call it, as opposed to sharing, because sharing tasks don't work, but you're redealing a card to them, that emotion is low, cognition is high, conversation to say, "Your pet day is Wednesday, and I just want to make sure that we're still on the same page, that that's not just, you know, feeding and walking the dog, but that we both remember on our days that it gets the special vitamin in the morning and that the medicine has to be delivered at night." So whatever it is, you're having these conversations in advance. And then if a standard changes, then you come back to the table and you basically say, "Hey, I noticed that on your meal day, on your breakfast," right? The kids, this is what Seth said to me a couple of weeks ago. The kids eat.
He's like, "I'm surprised you didn't give them blueberries."
Exactly. Well, he does. He actually makes smoothies for them. But he said to me, "All our kids eat on your breakfast morning days when the card is redealt to you is, you know, sourdough toast with Nutella every single day. That's what my kids eat." And so I said to him, "Yeah, you're probably right. I could probably switch things up. There's probably something else that on their palate that they could get every single morning. That's my time to eat breakfast other than Nutella."
Yep. And he did that when emotion was low and cognition was high.
I could hear it. I could hear it.
So if John and I really want to work through lunch, like we have to sit down and have a conversation about what that lunch is going to look like. So it's not just you're going to do it and I don't know how he's going to fulfill it or vice versa.
Exactly.
Okay. That's really, right. really good.
And maybe you don't care. And if you really don't care, but a lot of people do seem to care, you know, whether your child has a vegetable or that there's some sort of, I mean, I don't care about that stuff as AKA the Nutella, but some people do care. And if you do, then those things should be should be talked about. Communication is your most important practice. And typically people will say to me, I communicated once about the lunches and nothing ever got done. So I took it back. That's like saying I exercised once in 2005 and I'm going to my doctor tomorrow, my physical, and I'm going to tell them I'm physically fit. It doesn't work that way. We have to practice communication the same way we practice exercise.
I just love how you compare your own household. You say, what if we started to treat our home like the most important organization? You own that task from start to finish. And again, those things start to build up because of the invalidation, but it's such a good paradigm shift. Like, this is our most important organization. Let's run it. Let's run it like a well-fueled machine.
Well-oiled machine.
I was like, that does not sound right. But and if I could encourage, like, the why behind all of this, don't bury it with your partner. Don't sit on this and wait until you're on a Facebook group of 27,000 going to kill my partner. It is important that you ask for help. It is important you have these conversations, because not one person should be carrying the domestic load at home. It is so vital to a healthy relationship, to a healthy partnership, to be a true partner at home. And that's why I love, at the end of the day, when you peel back all of these layers, Eve, you're really trying to strengthen relationships and families. And
That's really all I care about. And to be honest, you know what? I want to strengthen all relationships, even co-parent relationships. Yes. We see a lot of people using fair play in their divorce settings now, because they understand that their partner is now taking over care and that person has never had to do care before. All relationships can benefit from systems.
A question that you recommended, and as we close, that I have had with John, you say open the conversation by asking your partner what the division of labor looked like in their house growing up. Yes. Was the workload divided? What were you responsible for as a child? And just understanding how I was raised, how my partner was raised, that for us really helped get the conversation going. So I'm excited. We're going to link to all of these resources at the show notes. You are just doing incredible work. So I want to.
So are you. I feel that way too.
Relationships. So
thanks, Paula.
Really great for you, friend.
I really appreciate you. Thank you. Thank you for, you know, being now an alternative to, you know, some traditional media messaging that I think does unfortunately perpetuate, even when they're not trying to, these assumptions over what women should be doing with their time. Thank you for blowing it all up. We here at the Fair Play Movement love what you're doing.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so grateful for you, Eve. I took copious notes, and I bet you did too. I'm going to go back and listen a few more times too, to make sure that I'm calling everything from that conversation. John's already listened, and I can't wait for you to hear his feedback and his response as well next week as we continue our series on relationships. But some things that really stood out to me: run your house like you're running a business. And the three-step process, the boundaries, the systems, and the communication, saying, I respect you, I am going to own it, and then if I make a mistake, I'm going to own the mistake. It's so important. Eve, thank you for kind of giving us the guardrails to have these conversations, which can be very triggering. And again, do not invalidate your feelings. Do not invalidate that overwhelm, because it is happening and it is putting a huge stress and strain on our relationships. I'm going to put a link to all of Eve's content, including not just her book, not just the documentary, but she mentioned those 100 cards that are free. They're on her website. I'm going to link to that in the show notes as well, but you can also find it on fairplaylife.com. But I encourage you, listen to this conversation with your partner. It might be a difficult one. Have those conversations when emotion is low and cognition is high. But boundaries, systems, communication, and then laying out the clear expectations. What does our minimum standard of care mean for ownership of this task? You guys, we've got to stop just saying, you know what, I'll just do it. It's going to be easier that way. Because what that does is it just puts an overwhelming amount of stress and strain on us, and then we're not our best version for anybody. We cannot carry it all. Next week, as we continue our series on relationships, John's back again. He's going to weigh in on today's conversation, but we're going to wrap it up with a conversation with none other than Dr. Henry Cloud, who is a trust expert. Trust is the number one most important aspect to any relationship. He's going to talk about how we build it and how we repair it when it is broken. It's going to be a great conversation. Can't wait to see you next week as we continue to talk about it. I know you guys thought you were done with me, but not quite yet. I have one more thing to tell you about. If you're watching on YouTube or you're listening on your favorite podcast platform, don't forget to subscribe to the show. I don't want you to miss a single beat or a single conversation. And remember, my DMs are always open. Tell me what you want to talk about.